Okay, we're in Malachim Aleph. We are in the sixth parak. We're on page 56. 56. This is the third week learning the sixth chapter. The parak begins, Vayiven Shlomo es habayis v'chalehu. That this whole parak has been discussing. Thank you. This whole chapter has been discussing the construction of the first temple, the Beit HaMikdash, done by King Solomon, by Shlomo HaMelech. And in the middle, as we spoke about last week, God speaks to the king, to Shlomo, and he says, you're doing a beautiful job building this thing. However, the important aspect is not the edifice, not the physical structure, but rather, it's the mitzvos, it's your Torah observance, it's the ethical nature that you present yourself with, it's being a good person. And immediately afterwards, Shlomo accepts this rebuke or these powerful words, and he continues to build. So now when he's building, presumably the message is that he's building not only with the right materials, but also the right intentions. Well, it's a good question exactly why Hashem did speak to him in the middle, but either it's some type of a warning to make sure that he stays on task, or maybe, as we saw, he did certain things that were questionable, his marriages, etc. So this could have been, again, just a way for him to realize what he was doing and the importance of it was more than just a building.
At this point, he had already had a lot of marriages?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. And he also had a lot of horses, things which are direct prohibitions from the Torah for kings to have. So many possessions, horses, etc. So, but he continues building. Vayiven es kiros habayis mebaisa. So he builds the walls of this, of the Beit HaMikdash. Mebaisa is translated in Mesudasin as mebefnim, from the inside. But salos arazim, and he uses cedar wood. Mikarka habayis ad kiros hatsipun, all the way from the karka, from the ground, all the way up until the roof, which was already covered. Sipa eitz habayis. He covered this all up with wood. Yitzavas karka habayis betzels b'roishim. And as far as the floor was concerned, so that was the walls, and the floor, instead of using cedar, he used cypress boards. Now, Rashi points out, as we're going to see, his intention was not to have a beautiful wooden building, but it's going to be all covered up with gold. So Rashi says over here in Pasuk Tesvav, "Mibaisa b'tzelos arazim," that kiras eres etzel kira evan, that the foundation, as we said, were huge stones, big rocks, and that there were stones all around. That was the structure, the foundation of the Beit HaMikdash. "Kedei l'tuach alav zahav," his whole intention was to overlay the Beit HaMikdash with gold. Everything should be gold. Only the best. Kamosha Omer Lamata, as we'll see later on in verse 21, Yitzav Shlomo es habayis mipanima zahav sagur, that he wanted to surround all the temple, all the Beit HaMikdash with gold. And Rashi tells us an important lesson for all those who want to build a house made out of gold. V'yashir latuach zahav al gabi havanim. So the question is, so why does he have to have wood? The answer is because if you have stone, you can't overlay rocks with gold. It doesn't work. It's not going to stick. It's not going to stay. What you have to do is you have to have wooden boards, and then you can cover the wooden boards with gold. But you can't have gold covering rocks and boulders. So that's the reason why the whole purpose of this wooden structure was only so that he would be able to, above that, to be able to put gold. That was Shlomo's only intention of all this wood. Okay. So, and of course for the walls, but for the floor also, which is going to be, everything's going to be gold, you need to have wood first.
So who made this suggestion or statement that there should be gold? Like in Hashem or something?
Apparently, it's on the surface, it doesn't really discuss exactly how he was given this these ideas of how it should be constructed, but it certainly is also assumed that he's not just completely doing this on his own, that he was given some messages somehow from Hashem exactly how it should be built. Now, again, when we look at the Mishkan itself, the Torah does discuss. And we know there were numerous things in it which were made out of gold. Now, some of it was not made out of gold, and the roof was different. It was because of the temporary structure. So he had a little bit of a leeway on one level to learn from the Mishkan, another level to realize that this is more permanent in nature, and therefore more permanent things are required. Why gold? That's a good question, especially that we know that there's certain issues about bringing gold into the Kodesh HaKodashim, to the Holy of Holies. In fact, the Kohen Gadol, when he would enter into the Holy of Holies, which he normally would wear these eight garments, and much of it had gold on it. In fact, they were called the Bigdei Zahav, the golden garments. He would remove them before entering the Holy of Holies, so that God would not be reminded, so to speak, of the sin which was with gold, namely the golden calf, the Egel HaZahav. So there is an interesting question as to why, if God wants us to distance ourselves from gold on one hand, yet in other places it's gold. In fact, the Aron itself, which was in the Kodesh Kodashim, was gold. There was gold and wood, right, and then gold. So the question is why, what is acceptable, why certain gold is acceptable at certain times. Certainly, a person wearing it, we can understand. A person wearing it is different than it being on an inanimate object. So the person connecting themselves to gold may be too much of a reminder, as opposed to it being the ark, the holy Aron. There's certain questions that are certainly worthwhile thinking about, not such easy answers. V'yiven es esrim ama miyarkasei habayis b'tzalos arazim. So now we continue with the next pasuk tes vav. And he said that for 20 amos, or 20 cubits, he made this the miyarchase habayis, as Rashi and Musid Sion says, besof habayis, which is the back or the end of the temple, was made out of cedar wood. Minakarka ad hakiros, again from the floor until the kiros, until the ceiling, until the beams. V'yiben lo mebayis l'dvir lo kodesh v'dashim, and he built for the dvir the kodesh hakodashim, the holy of holies. So we find over here the dimension of 20 cubits, right? That it says that it is 20 cubits. In fact, if you would look just for a moment, going back to page 51, you could see on this little diagram, so that we know what we're talking about, the Dvir, also known as the Kodesh Kodashim, which is on the bottom left side on the English on page 51, you can see the dimension where it says 20. Because that's the verse that we just read that clearly says that it was 20 cubits in dimension. It's okay. Now we continue with the next room, which is Varboim ba'ama hoya haboyis hu ha'hechel lifnoi, lifonai. It says that for 40 amos, 40 more cubits, there was the house of the Beis HaMikdash. That was the hechel. That was the sanctuary which is before me. And this is referring to, going back again to that picture on page 51, the outer room. In order to get into the Holy of Holies, into the Kodesh HaKodashim, one must first enter the Heichal, the sanctuary, also known as the Kodesh, the Holies. And that, as you can see, is 40. So the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodashim total is 60, as you can see on the bottom of that picture. So it's just giving us the dimensions. And that's how this picture obviously knows that that's the size of these various rooms. Okay, at least it talks about that part, that side. Then it continues in Pasuk Yudches. Now, it's actually worthwhile also noting over here, before we see the next sentence, in the English on page 57, it says as follows, the length of the, where it says 17, the bottom left, the length of the entire building was 60 cubits. The western 20 cubit area was the Holy of Holies. The remaining 40 cubits, lefonai, at the front, was the Heichel, the sanctuary that we saw. But this is another interesting thing that's brought down by the Yalkut Shimoni. Homiletically, the sages relate the word lefonai to lifnos, to turn, which teaches that wherever in the world one is praying Shmoneh Esrei, One should turn toward the temple. So some say that's what the word lefona means, that you should always be before me. No matter where you are, you should be facing toward where the Heichal, where the holies, and the Kodesh Kodeshim, and the Holy and Holy of Holies are. Okay. Pasuk Ches. The Erez El Habayis Penima Mikalos Pikaim Peturei Tzitzin. It says that this was beautifully designed, these walls, that although there was this seemingly plain cedar wood, also was the Pikaim, Mesudas Siyam calls that seer pri. There was fruits, designs of all these different fruits. Peturei Tzitzim, Mesudas Siyam says, is prachim, flowers. So it's like almost like carved into the wood, this beautiful design of all this different blossoming flowers or different fruits. Hakol erez ein even nira. Everything was wood, and there was not a stone, not a rock that can be seen. So in other words, it wasn't like that they cut any corners, and okay, no one's really going to see this part, so we're going to skim over here. No, they covered every single place where there was rock. There was not a single place where you can see a rock, because that's not light, not very nice. See a bunch of stones and rocks. So they put beautiful cedar wood, and not only that, but they designed the cedar wood with all these beautiful designs. Okay. Now the commentators don't really discuss the symbolism of these designs, but one can imagine that when one thinks of a blossoming flower or fruit that is growing, so we think of renewal, which is the idea of going to the Beit HaMikdash, which is an opportunity for a person who may not have been doing all the right mitzvot or doing things properly. To go back is to like to renew yourself, to become a better person, and be like that blossoming flower. Udavir besoch habayis mipnima heichen, and this devir, which was inside, he prepared. This is referring to the Kodesh HaKodashim. And in the Holy of Holies was housed, in it was the Holy Ark, which again is the same thing as in the Mishkan, but everything was a little bit smaller. And the within the Devir, this inner sanctuary, was 20 cubits orech. We already established 20 amos, 20 cubits in length. The Esrim Ama Reichav, and it was 20 amos wide. So the Kodesh HaKadoshim was like a square. It was square 20 by 20. The Esrim Ama Komaso, and its height was precisely 10 amos. The Itzapehu Zohav Sogur, and they used gold, which was Sogur, which is translated here loosely as fine gold. We'll see what that means in Rashi shortly. The Yitzav Mizbeach Orez. And he took the altar also, and that was also covered with cedar wood. Alright, so that's what it was made out of. So, the Mizbeach, the altar, which was not in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the altar was in the Kodesh, in the Heichal, in the sanctuary, but in the Kodesh HaKadoshim was the Aron, which, as we said over here, they used the very fine gold, Zahav Sogur. We'll see exactly what's so special about Zahav Sogur in a second. We'll see that in Rashi. But again, for those that wish to look at the picture on 51, you see that that is the precise dimension of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, as we just read, that we have the Holy of Holies, which you see the diagram 20 by 20. So that's the size of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and 10 cubits high, which is on the bottom left on page 51. And in it, again, housed was the... Let's call it 2 feet at the longest. It's measured from the elbow until the tip of one's finger, which is approximately 18 inches to 24 inches. The biggest you can imagine is 2 feet. So it's 40 feet by 40 feet. It's not extremely large. And the Aron, that's the only thing that was really in there was the Aron. Okay. And it was closed on three sides. The only way you can get in was through the Kodesh, to get into the Kodesh Kodesh. So if we look at Rashi, Rashi points out, what does it mean, Zahav Sagur, on page 58, the very top. What is this fine gold? Sagur really doesn't mean fine. Sagur, you may find when you want to go shopping in Israel, the last thing you want to see on a door is the word Sagur, which means we're closed. doesn't mean closed gold. What does that mean? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi gives us two interpretations. One, Pirshu Barabo Seinu. Our rabbis teach us in the Talmud Yoma, he says, B'shah Sheniftach Limchor. At a time in which the stores are open to sell the stuff, Kol Chendios Acheros Niskaros. All the other stores are closed. Which basically is a nice way of saying that this is the greatest gold you can imagine, so there's no competition. If anyone's going to buy gold, and you find out that there's this high quality gold, all it causes all the other stores to be closed. So Zahav Sagor means it's such great gold that it causes other gold stores to be Sagor, to be closed up. Rashi says another interpretation. The Yonas and Targum, Dov Tav, fine gold, Ratzalemer, Mishieshlo Mimenu Sagrul Atzmo. Usually when it comes to, they say that you know you can put a price on anything. So if I ask you, how much do you want that necklace for, this ring for? So if I offer you enough money, you may sell it. However, when it comes to Zahav Sagor, anyone who has this gold, which is so unique and so special, Sagrul Atzmo, they close it up for themselves. They will never give it away to anyone. That's how special this gold is. Very, very unique and special gold. And there was there's a person, I think it's in Crown Heights, and he has all these artifacts. I'm not sure if he went. It's a small little house. It's on a little floor. And he has all these amazing little things, which are historical pieces from thousands of years ago. And he showed Zahav Sagor, this type of gold. I think this is what it was. And it bends like it's almost like paper. It's so thin and.
You know what it's like?
Is
such a thing today?
Yeah, he had this tiny little piece of it's so fine that it's just like you just like crumble in your hand. It's like unbelievable. So I believe that was the Zahav, the gold that he was showing us. But it's a very fascinating place. Some people in the shul have gone there. You just drive right by it, you wouldn't even know. And it's like a small room, probably the size, like this size. What? I'm not sure. Maybe he is. And he has all these amazing things. And he, I think most recently he was saying he came across a wheel, that was one of the wheels, of one of the chariots, when the Egyptians drowned in the sea. So they found this.
How could he know that?
They were. This is what, based on discovery. You have to go there and talk to him about this stuff. He has stuff from he has like Roman, like all these like shields and this. What?
You're not allowed to take that out of country.
No, this is like he's known, world known. This is everyone knows this guy. I don't know. You have to see this. This is. It's really an amazing thing, and you can literally spend hours on one shelf. Like he just pulls out this thing and that thing. It's just really fascinating. It's worthwhile taking a trip, and you really learn a lot about different things. But that's the newest thing. I think he may even have it. It's like in the middle of the room, this wheel or something. We have to find out. Tell me if you believe it. But anyway, Pasach Chafal. So Shlomo, as we mentioned previously in a few sentences before, in one of the commentaries, it says that Shlomo built this house, and inside of it he took this Zahav Sagor and he put gold all around it. V'yamer bartukos Zahav, and bartukos mesudasion is mishalshalos. Mishalshalos is chains of gold. He made chains of gold with Nehadavir by this area, this Kodesh Kodashim, this room. Yitzapehu Zahav, and he covered it with gold. So he made all these beautiful designs with gold, and everything was overlaid with gold. Yes, Kol HaBayis Sipa Zahav, Atom Kol HaBayis. The entire house was covered up with gold. V'chol HaMizbeach Asher Ledvir Sipa Zahav, as well as the altar, the Mizbeach, was also covered with gold. V'yas B'dvir Shnei Kruvim Atzei Shaman. Now we have the Kuruvim. Now the Kuruvim here are a little bit different than the Kuruvim that we're familiar with in when it came to the Tabernacle, the Mishkan. When it came to the Kuruvim, which were two angel-like figures in which they were like child faces and they had a huge wingspan and they faced one another, the way it was on the Mishkan, in the Mishkan, they had the Holy Ark, the Aron, and on top of it was a kaporas, the covering, which is about 4 inches high, thick, and then above that were the place of these Kuruvim, these two angel-like figures. Over here, we're going to see that they were different, that they were actually not on top of the Aron, but they were on the ground. And they were different, that this was the only time that this was made. If you look in the English, before we actually delve into the dimensions over here for the few minutes that we have, and on page 59 it says the Cherubim, which I think is how you translate Kuruvim into English, Cherubim. Okay, God commanded Moses to build the Holy Ark, which would house the tablets of the Ten Commandments. Upon the ark, he was to place a solid gold cover from which to fashion two gold cherubim. They were angel-like figures similar to those, the prophetic visions of Isaiah and Ezekiel. Moses' two cherubim had the faces of children, and they faced one another. They had wings that stretched upward and covered the ark. They were only 10 handbreadths high. A handbreadth is like a fist, which is 3 to 4 inches, so they were small. They were only three, like, the whole cherubs were only, like, a yard high. They were, like, 36 inches, approximately, maybe 40 inches at the most high. That's how big they were. A bit under 40 inches, it says here. Next paragraph, Solomon added two more cherubim, so these are not the same ones, which were different from those of Moses in several ways. Made of wood and overlaid with gold, they were 10 cubits high, which is about 20 feet, right? So the ones that Moses made, which were on top of the Aron, were small. These were much larger, 10 amos, about 20 feet high. That's how big they were. Stood on the floor of the inner sanctum and faced eastward toward the sanctuary. Like the other innovations not found in Moses' tabernacle, the Mishkan, the instructions for the new Kerubim were contained in the prophetic instructions conveyed to Solomon by David. So, apparently what that is teaching us is the message that it wasn't just made up. He actually got all these instructions from his father, which answers another important question that we say in Psukah Dezimra, which is in Psalms, Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid. Right? We talk about the house that David built, right? And we speak about, on Sukkot, we say, Sukkot David Hanofalas, the house of David that fell down. David himself didn't lay one brick, not a piece of wood, not a stone, nothing. So some say because he got a lot of the raw materials, which we see his son also did a lot, chopping the trees and things. But we see over here that David is the one that gave all the instructions to his son. Right. So therefore, David was really part of the process as well. So even though David didn't actually physically build it, but he gave all the diagrams, and he was like the architect, and exactly all the dimensions of how it should be constructed. So that's why we see again how David's involvement, even though he wasn't actually there, but he really was part of the process every step of the way. So the next few sentences speak about the Kuruvim. So let me just read a couple of sentences, then I'll conclude with one thought, and we'll stop. V'yasma devir shnei Kuruvim atzei sham. It's in verse 23, Pasuk Chav Gimel. So the devir, which is the Holy of Holies, was in it were these two Kuruvim, which were made out of shemen, not really oil, but oil from a tree, from olive trees. Esther amos kamoso, 10 cubits high, huge, 20 feet, huge, huge angel-like figures with wings. B'chamish amos kenaf hakruv ha'echad. B'chamish amos kenaf hakruv ha'shenis. That each kruv, which is referring to each of the wing of the kenaf, each wing of each kruv was five on each side. Eser amos, therefore total, 5 and 5 equals 10 cubits. Miksos kenafa v'yakisos kenafa. From one wingspan to the next was 10 cubits. So you can imagine how huge this was. You had the wingspan of 10 cubits. It was 10 cubits high, about 20 feet high, and each one was 10 cubits wide. The Eser Ba'alma HaKruv HaSheni, and so too with the second cherub, same dimensions. Mid Achas, they were the same measure. V'Ketzav Echad L'Shnei HaKruvim, they were the same form. They had the exact same, they looked exactly the same. Koimas HaKruv Echad Eser Ba'alma, the height of one of them, as we said, was 10 amos, 10 cubits. V'Chein HaKruv HaSheni, the other one was 10 cubits. The Yitin Es HaKruvim B'Soch HaBayis HaPnimi, it was put in the inner room, the Kodesh Kodashim. The Yifrusu Es Kanfei HaKruvim, and the wings spread outward. V'Tiga K'naf Echad Bekir, U'K'naf HaKruv HaSheni, Nogas Bekir HaSheni. So because each one was 10, and the walls, remember, was a 20 by 20 structure, so the wings touched the walls. There were one wall, because it was 10, and then 10. So that means the tip of each of the wings were touching the walls on both sides. Fine. El Tocha Bayis Nogas Kanaf El Kanaf. That what ended up happening after this, V'Kanfehem El Tocha Bayis Nogas Kanaf El Kanaf. The two wings on the inside of the two cherubs were touching one another. So they were touching one another, the two cherubs' wings. And the other side, the cherub's wings were touching the walls. V'yitzafas HaKruvim Zahav. And he took all of these cherubs and he made them and covered them up with gold. Okay, now let me just conclude with the following thought. And then we'll pick this up after the holidays. Okay, it's brought down a very interesting commentator that says that we can learn out from the Keruvim, we can learn out from the Aron two important messages. The importance of the duality of the Torah, we have mitzvos which are ben adam l'makom, and mitzvos which are ben adam l'chavero. Commandments which are between man and God, and that which is between man and man, our fellow man, and how they're equal of value. He says that, on one hand, you have these wings. What's the symbolism of the wings? So why do you have to have wings? That's strange. What does that mean? So when we think of a bird, we think of a bird that has the ability to elevate itself all the way to the skies. And that's what one is supposed to do also when it comes to our mitzvot, which is between man and God. We must emulate the ways of these cherubs that have the capacity to be able to, so to speak, fly all the way up to the sky. But the other message is that these two cherubs, they're facing one another. That the two cherubs, these two angel-like figures, they were not just looking in opposite directions, but they faced one another. So it was not enough to be able to have the wings, to be able to fly up, to be able to connect to the mitzvot between man and God, but also it's necessary to be able to embrace one another and to be able to also focus on the mitzvot between man and man at the same time. So therefore, some people say that's the symbolism of the cherubs, and that's why it's in the Kodesh Kodashim, because that's the Holy of Holies. Even in the Holy of Holies, in which God is, the place in which you would think you should only focus on God, Ben Adam L'Makom, even in such a place, God emphasizes, don't ever forget the Ben Adam L'Chavero, don't forget your fellow man.